Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's December 9th. Currently, we've got 33 degrees under cloudy skies. Heber City reporting 34 degrees under clouds. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at a mixture of sun and clouds as we go throughout the day today. Temperatures will climb into the mid-40s for us in the Park City area, with high temperatures climbing to around 50 degrees for us in the Heber Valley. As we go into your forecast for your Wednesday, look for a mixture of sun and clouds. Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, we could have an isolated rain or snow shower pop up, but should not amount to much. We'll see temperatures dipping down to around the freezing mark early Wednesday morning, with highs in the upper 40s for us in Park City, with highs in the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. As we get into your Thursday, look for plenty of sunshine, chilly temperatures to kick off the morning in the upper 20s. We'll see highs around 50 in Park City, with highs around the mid-50s in the Heber Valley. Heading into your weekend, we've got lots of sunshine expected, with slightly cooler temperatures in the morning, with those morning lows dipping down into the low to mid-20s for us for your Saturday and Sunday mornings, and afternoon high temperatures right around the upper 40s to near 50 in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-50s for us in the Heber Valley. Again, these temperatures are some 10, 15, if not almost 20 degrees above average for this time of the year. And that pattern looks to hold as this big blocking high-pressure ridge off the west coast stay in place. So yeah, we've got more sunshine heading into next week. A cool mornings with those temperatures dipping down into the 20s, but overall in the afternoon, we'll be looking at highs around that 50 degree mark in Park City, and high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 50s in the Heber Valley. As far as precipitation chances go, again, a slight chance of a valley rain or mountain snow shower Tuesday night into Wednesday morning. And then again, we may see something try to pop up beginning around the Monday night into Tuesday time frame. But both of those chances look very slim. The main story, above average temperatures and mostly dry conditions this week, right on into next week. And of course, next weekend is the weekend before Christmas. We'll let you know if we see any winter-like conditions heading our way. That's the latest forecast of the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And on the phone with us, with the look in the backcountry, we've got Nikki from the Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday, we didn't have any new avalanches reported from the backcountry, but a few observers still got out and about, and they did continue to note some cracking and collapsing. Our main issue right now is still that persistent weak layer. So we've got a persistent weak layer from October and November that kind of makes up the base of our snowpack, so weak faceted grains. Now with slab on top of that, the setup was obvious over the weekend. We had widespread avalanche activity, red flags, but as we move farther away from the weekend storm, those signs are gonna be less obvious, but the structure still exists. So we're gonna see sensitivity and likelihood decrease, but consequences remain the same. You wanna pay attention in the mid and upper elevation bands on the north end of the compass, so west, north, and east facing aspects. As well, we wanna take the winds into account. So like you just heard, the winds have been elevated over the last few days. They're blowing up to 70 miles per hour at the highest elevations. In some places, that's going to scour the surface, so remove all the snow. But in other places, it's taking that snow, drifting, and building both fresh slabs and hard slabs. Where these wind slabs sit on top of those weak faceted snow, it won't take much to overload that structure. So even a small wind drift could break down into the weak faceted snow. For that reason, we're going to have a moderate avalanche danger today at all upper elevations and mid elevations facing west through north through east.
Okay, Nikki, thanks so much. Well, coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott, taking a look at the agenda for Wednesday's County Council meeting. Later on, South Summit Superintendent of Schools Greg Mon with details on last night's board meeting. The director of the Midway Swiss Bells, Carrie Knapp, has details on their holiday concert. And from the Christian Center, I have Executive Director Steve Richardson, along with the Director of Operations, Brack Pulver. The Summit County Council meets tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville, starting at about 3:15 in the studio with a preview. I have County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So when does next year's budget get adopted?
It's scheduled to be adopted this Wednesday. We had one public hearing on December 3rd at the Richens Building here in the Basin. And we're hoping to have one more on the 10th in Colville at the courthouse. And we are anticipating that the budget will be adopted at that time.
Okay. And you do have one more discussion Wednesday regarding county council salaries. Any issues here, or why is this coming back now?
Well, there've just been some debate about it. It is, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago during one of my presentations, it's probably the hardest thing the council does is having to establish their own salaries. I think it's important that they take into account not just themselves. Everybody wants to be able to serve the public for as little funds as they possibly can. But also, it's important to note that when the council sets salaries, they're doing that for the future as well. And the higher salary they establish, the more diversity we can have on council. If we have no salary or have very low salaries, what that tends to do is drive those who are able to serve up to, that it's more of your older folks, it's more of your males actually. So we're trying to get as much economic diversity, gender diversity, age diversity as we can on our councils, and the way to do that is to have as high salaries as we can. We're talking about, I think their current salary right now is $61,000 a year, a good salary in some parts of the county, or some parts of the world, that not a great salary for Summit County, especially in how much our council does. They're part-time, technically, I'm putting that into quotes. But they do so much, and they work well over 20 to 30 hours a week in their council assignments. They take it very seriously, and it's something that I've really, I hope they acknowledge how hard they work, how much it impacts their families, their other positions, their other jobs that they all have on one level or another. And so I'd like to see them set a salary really recruit future council members of all kinds. And also, if I might mention, we have the districts now. So as we used to be able to take advantage of 45,000 people in countywide, we could have two people in South Summit that both could serve. Now we have restrictions in each district to only 8,000 people. I know that's a lot of people, but it does limit who can serve in what capacity.
Sure. So 61,000 is what's being proposed, or is that what it's at currently?
That's what it's at currently. I think we put in the budget 70,000, but we probably are kind of considering that a ceiling and didn't think they would go above that. But so they can land anywhere in there, and we'll have the budget set for adoption.
So in addition, they receive health benefits?
They receive some 401k. Yes. Okay.
All right, but no health insurance.
No.
That's on their own. Okay, so again, that still needs to be worked out then before you can adopt a budget.
It does. We need that direction. We need to set that.
Later on in the meeting, a possible approval of Basin Rec's proposed budget. Actually, this will have to be approved if, in fact, you're going to approve the budget. That calls for a 15% tax increase in their portion of the property tax. So explain to me what happened last week. It just seemed very odd that we've got a council member pulling out a cell phone to get another absent council member to call in with a vote that he has not heard any discussion about.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he knew that we'd get this passed if he had made the call?
Well, I don't know if that was in his intent. I think to that council member's defense, they wanted to have they wanted to see this vote taken. They didn't want it to be a stalemate. I don't know that they needed it to be in favor or against the tax increase. Having 2-2, if two are in favor of a tax increase and two are not, and they both vote their own way, we would be at a stalemate. We wouldn't have the tax increase, and we do need to set a budget, whether that budget has the 15% tax increase or it doesn't. So I think the cause was just in having that tie broken one way or the other. Council member Robinson, who was trying to join us there, I don't know if he had listened to any of the meeting. Maybe he hadn't. I don't know if he had reviewed the packet. Maybe he hadn't. I think he could have spoke to that himself. But I think where we landed was good in that we closed the public hearing, but we did push the decision out a week, and I believe we'll have all five council members there this week to be able to vote their conscience. And I've actually interacted with Councilmember Robinson, who has taken the time to review the what was said and the comments that were made, and certainly he's always reading his packet, so he'll be prepared.
Okay, so he has since heard the public testimony, most of that against the tax increase, and I guess it's like, is that just what politics, to try and get something done like that? I mean, again, why would we expect a council member to vote on something that he hasn't heard the full discussion about?
Well, I think that's why we delayed the vote. So we may not want to do that. I'm not sure. I'm assuming that he had not listened to the discussion. I don't think he had. But at the same time, I think that those could have been questions. If we got him on the Zoom and he was able to join, we could have asked that. I mean, we could have continued this discussion for another 2 hours of more comments if we wanted to. So I think that's fair. But at the same time, I don't think any of the council was just trying to rush a vote or trying to sneak something by. I think the comments from the public were good. Some of them were, we don't like taxes, don't raise taxes. Personally, I don't think that's a reason not to raise taxes. But many of the comments were specific to the budget, were asking questions about the marketing person, or you know, so people had taken the time to review the budget, and I really appreciate that level of effort. At the same time, I think we have a very good administrative control board for Basin Rec. I think we have great staff. We just hired a brand new director to replace Dana Jones, Mr. Robert Parrish, and I believe they're moving in a good direction. And I think in some ways we need to respect that we have put good people into those positions, and that if they're requesting a tax increase, that's something they actually need.
Okay. There is a closed session to discuss property acquisition. What is the latest with the 910 and the Year Ranch? I mean, the year, end of year is approaching.
Yes. There's nothing at the end of the year that we don't need to close by the end of the year. But we have received word on the Year Ranch that the NRCS has... They have pushed the button to move the funds into the title company on their side, which is really, really exciting. We're trying to still, we've had so much whiplash with this, so much back and forth. We're trying not to get too excited until we sit down and sign the documents. But the Year Ranch is looking very positive, and I believe that we will close on the Year Ranch within the next couple of weeks.
And the 910?
The 910, we are in a... We did an appraisal. The federal agencies did not like the appraisal, so we're in a reappraisal process. I think it's really just logistics. They really scrutinized like the buildings on the 910 for their value. We're talking about $55 million, and the buildings are probably tens of thousands of that. So I don't know why we're getting into these kinds of levels of detail, but we're just trying to placate everybody and get this thing closed. I really believe that'll be in the next couple of I'm going to say months on that one, because I just don't know. It's out of our hands, out of our control as far as the timing goes, but it's just looking really positively, and we're just keeping our fingers crossed.
So back to the what they didn't like about the building's valuation. Did they think that the county valued them too low or too high?
They believe that the appraiser valued them too low. They wanted to know what was inside the buildings, and just again from the amount of where this property came in, it came in over what we were paying for it. So we are confused about why that would make a difference if we needed those buildings to be valued at a higher level. But their level, trying to get accurate, we support that. And again, we're just trying to just make sure we do all that we can. We're answering these emails as quickly as we can. We're returning things, turning things around as quickly as we can. Just trying to get this closed.
Okay, so it wouldn't change the agreement that we have, the purchase price. So they just need to, they're just crossing their T's and dotting their I's here?
Yes.
Okay, and we're talking about what, an older home and kind of a storage shed, and
yes.
What else is out there?
The home is what I was thinking about, but and I, you know, I've never been inside that home. I don't know what's in there, but I feel I am a very untrained professional, and I feel like I could look at that home and tell you what it's worth very, very easily. And I'm no appraiser, but and if we want to talk that I'm off of tens of thousands of dollars, that's fine. But at the end of the day, we need this to appraise for a certain amount of money, and it already has.
All right. Let's see. Have you come up with your 2026 work plan, or are you waiting for the council retreat on that?
We've taken the feedback from our work plan meeting that was back in September, and Jana and I will present that on the 17th. That's our last meeting of the year, so a week from Wednesday we'll present the work plan and have that conversation once we get all the seven public hearings done with the budget, which is this Wednesday.
Okay. Let's see, in terms of the budget, anything else you wanted to mention?
Maybe just that we have North Summit Fire is also on the docket for Wednesday. North Summit Recreation is also on the docket for Wednesday. North Summit Fire had proposed a truth and taxation process. Their administrative control board voted to not do that. It's still in the council's purview. They still could go through truth and taxation, kind of force it. I don't know what the council will do there, but I think that the fact that the ACB took that position of not raising taxes this year, I'd like to know why that is. What's changed? That would be my first question. They made a comment in their materials that they'd like to work with the county on sustainable funding strategies. I'm not sure what that means. When you are a special service district, your sustainable funding strategy is to raise property taxes if you don't have enough funds. So I'm wary of that, but I'm curious and would like to know more about that. But other than that, I think the budget's coming together. Appreciate the council and their time and effort and attention to the budget. They just take this so seriously, and we have such a wonderful council that really wants to be involved and understand this budget, and I appreciate that.
All right, and now is North Summit Recreation looking for a tax increase?
No, they're just going through their regular process, budget process.
Okay, so when we look at a work plan, though, I guess what are some of the big items that you're kind of thinking of?
Well, to me, the work plan is coming to the council from the staff level with the resources, all that we need to provide the services and to meet the vision of the council. So if they have a sustainability vision, then we have a staff member that will come and say, if you want to meet these sustainability goals, this is how we do it. And these are the resources we need. So it was a precursor to the budget, that conversation back in September. And I think that we, between the budget and the work plan, we're meeting that directive from the council to meet the various, whether it's open spaces or being very responsive on snow plowing. All those directives come from council, and I think that's the work plan is a reflection of those day-to-day decisions we need to make administratively to meet that vision.
Yeah. Now, do you need to get out of the Richens building in 2026?
We will. We will. We also on December 17th should have a contract with a contractor to get into the what we used to be calling the Skull County building. We're about to hopefully brand a new name. We're going through a process right now to do that. Go through a tenant improvement program on the first floor, and that should be ready by May or June, and hopefully we'll have all the library and lands and transportation, all the DMV, all those different departments that are in the Richens building, will move to that new space there on the first floor of the Skull Candy building.
All right. So who's been tasked with renaming the building?
We went through a process just internally with staff to come up with some ideas to staff-wide. So this is all 400 employees had the opportunity to provide some names, and we've narrowed that down. We're going to bring that to the public for some kind of a vote, hopefully narrowing that down from five or so to one name. So,
okay. And any idea when we're going to hear that?
Very soon. Part of our activities on this Wednesday is our annual Christmas holiday party, lunch party for all the staff. And at that party, we're going to talk a little bit about this and ways in which the staff can vote. And then we'll bring that to the public here in the next couple weeks.
All right. And any updates on the upcoming legislative session? Anything you're hearing that concerns you at this point?
Not specifically. I think there are a couple of bill files, even by Senator Winterton, that have addressed county classifications and also county commissions. I think one of those maybe does affect us, or the classification. We're not sure what the point of the bill is yet. I think it only affects Summit County and Washington County in southern Utah. So there's a couple of those out there. There might be some tinkering with county forms of government. I've heard that Summit County won't be affected by a lot of those just because of where we landed with the districting bill and our form of government. And then we're always on the watch for housing. And we're going through those meetings right now with our lobbyists to prepare for the legislative session. We also have a kind of an open house where we invite legislators, especially those that represent us, to Colville. We have a little dinner and we talk about some of our proposals and hear from them what their what their needs are and how they see this legislative session going. So housing's always an issue. There's talk of a statewide housing plan that would cover all of us at once. We're just, you know, curious and of course concerned about some of those items.
All right. Did Senator Winterton reach out to the county just to ask about, you know, that I'm working on this? What do you think?
I don't think he did, but I think it's really early, and I did hear about it from our lobbyists. So there was he had some sort of a presentation he made during the interim session that we watched, so it wasn't altogether surprising. But again, we're just curious about what that's going to look like. And I've heard talk of certain counties of a certain size and population that will be asked to move away from the commission, that a three-member commission for a certain size of county isn't they don't feel like that's the best form of government for that. I understand that. I think your Utah County is a good example of that. It's a very large county, and a three-member commission can be very challenging in managing both the administration side and the legislative side of that county. So whether it'll be forced into something else, I'm not sure, but I think some of those things are being reviewed.
Okay. Anything else, Scott? Shane?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
You as well. Well, the South Summit Board of Education met last night, and on the phone to recap yesterday's meeting is the Superintendent of Schools, Greg Mong. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. So during work session, the board discussed facility planning. What are they talking about?
Well, I think I mentioned last month they had approved an RFP that had gone through for an architect firm to help us with a 20-year facilities master plan. And so last night, or I guess yesterday afternoon, the purpose of it was to really sit down and dig into some of the why and the what and the how with the board, trying to capture what it is that they find important as board members, as community members, and that, so that we can help them in narrowing down ideas to bring back to the board as far as, you know, different options and things like that. And so it was a great work session where they were able to ask their questions and get those questions answered. And really what we're hoping is that they can help come up with some ideas on what that 20-year long-term facility plan might look like.
Yeah.
So that the board could go ahead.
I was just going to say, at this point, I mean, what facilities are being considered?
Well, really, we're looking at all of our facilities, in the sense that it makes sense if you're investing in into the facility needs and things like that. It makes sense to look at all of your facilities. We're mainly looking at facilities that serve kids, so schools, obviously, but also the transportation is being looked at also, as far as the space that they're at currently versus potential other space to move the transportation to. I think about the only thing we're not really talking about is a district office, because there's no real need to invest in anything like that. Our office, the district office, is in great shape, and it's one of the newer buildings, but that's partly because, as you should, you invest in schools. And so in South Summit, they made sure that the school needs were met before they focused on a district office, you know, many years ago. So we're really looking at schools and transportation.
Okay. You had a representative from MHTN. Is this the RFP contractor here?
Yes, MHTN Architects. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So what are the next steps with this?
Well, I think next step is they're going to take the input that they got from the board yesterday during the work session and start putting pen to paper and actually working on next steps and looking at timelines, as far as, you know, if option A, this is a timeline you could do with option A, is a different timeline you could do with option A, and just kind of go through the different options and see what the appetite is for the board and the community on moving forward. I think I've mentioned at other times, you know, our buildings are all about the same age, and so we really need to have a proactive approach to how we're going to address those facility needs, because there's just not the ability to build multiple schools at one time anymore, like there was, you know, when these buildings were built.
Okay. Let's see. During the regular meeting, the board got an update from the IT department. Anything the public should know?
Well, we're partnering with Northeastern Utah Education Service Center to help us with just making sure that we're compliant and really being proactive in our cybersecurity approaches. It's one of the things that the board has asked about. So we're going through that process right now. And we'll continue to go through that for the next little while as we work on making sure that we have the best safeguards in place to protect sensitive information. You know, whether it's multi-factor authentication or all of the inner workings of systems that I certainly don't understand, since I'm not an IT expert, but you know, I'm really glad that we have the team on it that we do, because they're proactive, they're forward thinking, and they see the value and the necessity of keeping information private.
All right, the board also heard from Steve Sutherland with the aquatic facility, who is recommending an increase for both resident and non-resident passes. How much are we talking about?
Well, it's a little different depending upon the different passes that you're talking about. South Summit went many years without raising any fees, and the last few years they've adjusted that a little, you know, in small increments, just to try to get a little more in line with costs. It's something that the school district actually offsets some of the costs each year, and so what the board and what we've asked as district leadership is that they consider, you know, as things go up, they've been asked to consider the implications of that. So we, based on comparisons, it's still a pretty dang good deal.
Okay. So did you vote on that, or did the board
the board did vote on that. So they got the update, and then later on in the meeting, it was an action item, and they approved the rate increase.
And that goes into effect, what, January 1?
Yes.
All right. The board also needed to approve its audit. Did you have a clean one there?
Yeah. Thankfully, you know, our finance department, our business administrator, our accountant, they're amazing. Our audits always come out clean. Our business department, our finance department, they're very growth minded. They're always wanting to improve. And so it's not uncommon, you know, for them to ask the auditors, hey, you know, how could we improve here? How can we improve there? And so it shows in our audits.
Okay. The district's also moving to the Diligent One platform. What's this for?
Well, so Diligent is the platform that we use for our policies and our procedures. And so Diligent is just upgrading the access to that information. I really was letting the board know that they'll be getting an email probably early January that requires them to set up a multi-factor authentication to be able to access the editable versions of policy and procedure, since they are involved in some of the updates and things like that. And so it's just another added safety measure to make sure that our data is clean and that it doesn't get corrupted. It can be a little bit of a pain sometimes when you're setting up multi-factor authentication. And so I just wanted to make sure that the board was aware that was coming. And we'll mention it again in our January board meeting and help get them all set up so that they can access the materials that they need to be able to be productive and effective board members.
All right. Let's see. A number of policies were being considered. Anything the public needs to know about?
Well, policies that you know, that the board talked about. One of them is artificial intelligence and AI policy, and that was approved for first reading. We know that AI is being used, and so it's important for us to be able to provide some direction and guardrails for staff and for students, whether that AI use is student-facing or not student-facing. And so we're just, we want to make sure that we're, like I said, we're providing that guidance to help make sure that we stay in the safe zone and don't put anyone at risk of either sharing sensitive information or sharing things that shouldn't be shared. And so they approved for first reading that AI policy. They also approved for first reading a reduction in force policy. It's a policy that you hope that you never have to use, but in the event that you do need to use it, it's good to have policy and procedure in place to help just make sure that everything's transparent and clear to everyone in the system.
All right. Speaking of force, I saw a handful of new hire approvals. Have these teachers been in place since the start of school, or they've just come on recently?
Some. So we had a vacancy come up at one of the schools, and so that position was filled by another internal candidate at that school. And so we posted that person's position, and so it was hired. The principal hired someone who was currently employed in our district, but not serving in a capacity as a teacher. They had taught in our district before, and they were in a different position, and they wanted to go back into the classroom, and so that was able to happen. And so that we didn't have too much of a domino effect.
Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I'd mention, you know, some of the update was just expressing the success of our Camas Valley Community Foundation Mingle and Jingle Gala. That was awesome. They raised, you know, we'll know the exact amount here in the near future, but it was an opportunity to pull community members together, raise some money for the four different pillars of that foundation, education being one of them, and just it was a great opportunity for us to pull different groups of people from around our valley to support our valley. It was a lot of fun, and it was a very successful event.
Okay, Greg, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Well, the annual Swiss Handbell and Choir Holiday Concert is coming up. And on the Fun with Details, I have the director of the Swiss Handbells team, Carrie Knapp. Good morning, Terry. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so first tell us when and where is the concert going to be held?
The concert is held at the Town Hall in Midway, and it will be on the 15th of December at 7 p.m.
Okay, so just one concert this year?
Yeah, just that one for the community. We kind of call this concert a gift to the community. And we travel and do other things throughout the Christmas season, but we make sure we save a date and put on a concert for the community and the surrounding areas.
Nice. Well, it seems like you used to perform in Park City, but no longer?
Well, we perform wherever we're invited to perform. As a matter of fact, we just were in Park City. We were at the Shepherd of the Mountain Lutheran Church, and we put on a wonderful concert with some other musicians on Saturday, this past Saturday, the 6th.
All right. So is there a cost to the December 15th show?
No, it's free to the public.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about Swiss handbells. I mean, we know they're much different than the Swiss cowbells used for ski races.
Yes, they are. The first set, actually, almost 40 years ago, was purchased by donations from the community. And inside all of our handbells is a little placard that says who donated. So that's kind of a great history for us. And then we are supported by the boosters, and they help us with being able to get whatever music or needs we have. And we've been, so that, like I said, almost 40 years now. And it's a fun instrument to play. It's considered a percussion instrument.
All right. Now, so do you need to be a musician to play one of these things?
Unfortunately, yes, to some degree. Some people have thought they'd love to play and then realize they have to be able to read music. So you do have to be able to read music and get the tricky rhythms, because you don't play every note. You might only play every third note or every tenth note. So you have to be ready to ring your bell at the right time.
Yeah. And how many bells is somebody responsible for ringing at the right time?
Well, typically four. Typically you have two notes, two naturals, and then the sharps that go with them. So you'll have typically four notes, and but we do have a couple of ringers who are responsible for eight and another one that has 12. And they play those with mallets, so that they don't have to pick all of them up. They just ring them with mallets. So,
all right.
That is tricky.
Now, why are white gloves worn? Or maybe it's been a while since
just
I've seen
to protect, a show. Yeah, to protect the bells. You have every practice after we finish, we use a polishing cloth and we polish them and get them, you know, all make sure they're all clean and nice. And we polish them with polish like you would any silver or other things that you have like that. And so, yeah, you always want to wear gloves so that you're not going to get any of the oils from your hands on the gloves, on the bells.
Yeah, so it's an aesthetic thing as opposed to a performance thing.
Yeah, we kind of always wear ones, and they can be mismatched or whatever you want for wherever we practice. But it does look nice when we all have the same color gloves on when we perform.
Yeah. So what should people expect at the show?
Well, there'll be the choir will be singing numbers interspersed with numbers by the bells. The bells always try to do a little bit of a sing-along where we play and we have the audience sing along, and we sing a couple of Christmas carols with the group. And then so we just alternate back and forth with different numbers that the choir has ready and we have ready. But then at the very end, we're really excited this year, we have a piece called Wizards in Winter, which is a Trans-Siberian Orchestra piece. And the bells are doing it, and it's really fun. At the end, we have a tradition of doing a piece together with the choir. So it's the choir and the bells singing Angels We Have Heard on High with a piano accompaniment. And it's really, really special. So we love doing that at the end of the concert.
All right. So how many people do you have in your bells group?
In our bells group, we have 15 right now. We've had more. Sometimes we've had... are able to have two people on every set of bells, which increases the number that we have to about 20. And now we just kind of, you know, whoever we have, we're always interested in new people who might want to come and join us. And it's just really a fun thing to do.
Yeah. How often do you practice?
We practice once a week, and then we have a great big concert in the spring because a lot of high schools now are starting to have bell choirs, including Wasatch High. And so a lot of from all around the community, this north end of Utah, get together and we have a big concert. So they practice regularly, like 3 days a week or, you know, at school. But us old ladies and all the people that play with us are only once a week.
All right. And that's year long, or is it just prior to the concerts?
Pretty much year long. We'll take a break after we finish this concert on the 15th. We'll take a break, get back together mid-January, and then get ready for that big concert in March. And then we'll kind of take a little bit of a break and start up again in maybe mid-April. And then we get ready for Switch Days. So we just kind of have these different seasons that we prepare for, get ready for those things.
All right. Any idea how many folks you have in the choir?
Oh, I'd say there's at least 30, if not more. They've got a great group, and they're just wonderful and have practiced hard as well.
Okay. Carrie, anything else you wanted to tell us?
Well, just to invite anyone to come. We'd just love to have you come, and you'll definitely feel the Christmas spirit once you hear that concert.
Okay. Again, that's happening December 15th at Midway Town Hall. I guess it's just kind of first come, first serve.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of seating, though, so it should be just plenty for everyone.
Great. 7 p.m. All right, Carrie, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the Christian Center is rolling out another year of Operation Hope and continues to meet people at the point they're at with food and other basic needs. In the studio, I have Executive Director Steve Richardson along with Director of Operations Brock Pulver. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, why don't you start with Operation Hope? It's happening this week.
It's happening today. We are so excited about it. It's been such an outpouring of support throughout the community. We've gotten such amazing toys. We've got a donation from Skull Candy just yesterday where they give us so many headphones for the teenagers because we always struggle to get teenager toys. And it's just been wonderful. So we have piles and piles of toys that volunteers spent all day yesterday and some even the days before setting up a toy store. So as our listeners know, we don't just have people write down what they want. We set up an entire toy store for free. So it is beautiful in there right now at the UVU campus. We've got decorations and toys and parents coming in to shop throughout the day and tomorrow. And it's just such a wonderful experience. So we're really excited about the donations and really excited about the volunteers that are making this possible.
Yeah, so this makes it really fun for the parents as well, right? What they get to go in and pick, what, three or so gifts
yes.
per kid? Or?
Yeah, three gifts per kid, plus possibly a little bit more, but the you're right, this is really about the parents, and that's what strikes me about what we do, is the parents get the dignity of being able to shop for their kids and not just saying, hey, will somebody else buy something for my kid? They get to shop for free. They feel like they're the ones doing it. They're the ones that get to put it under the Christmas tree and just feel like they are the ones making it happen, and I'm so honored that we're able to give them that kind of respect.
Okay. Do you have any needs for any help wrapping the gifts once they're purchased?
We have a couple of spots left open that people could volunteer, or if there's even a last-minute gift, I can always run it over there if they want to drop it off at the Christian Center, because it's happening today and tomorrow, and we're just so excited.
Okay. How many kids are you able to help?
So it looks like we got about 1,800 that have signed up this year. So we help everybody who signs up. We make it happen, and we're excited to do it.
Okay. Brock, one of the things you're in charge of are the centers for thrift stores. And when I hear four, I'm like, well, one, two. Tell me about the four. We've got one at the outlets.
Yeah, so we have a new one at the outlets, and then we have Heber, mm-hmm. and then we have Thrift and Boutique here at the main campus. With the Heber, we've just expanded into and almost doubled our square footage. So we're able to do more furniture and larger items, and that center is almost our largest now.
Wow. So you kind of blew out one of the walls once it became available?
We absolutely did, yeah, and we doubled our square footage. We're pushing around 8,000 square foot over there at that store.
Okay. So what do each of them offer? The one at the outlets is kind of your real upscale?
Yeah, so our boutique is definitely our upscale, and then the thrift store at the main campus, everything is $15 or less. And then the outlets has its own kind of unique vibe out there. So we have over 5,000 pairs of things on hangers, clothing. And then we have our furniture and that kind of thing. But it's more upscale. And then Heber is quantity. So we push, you know, almost 6,000 things are sold every single month out of the Heber location. It's really, really busy, fast turnaround, low prices.
Now you have two reception centers, Park City and Heber City, and
correct.
Then at that point, that's where people decide where things are going?
Correct. So we have teams, receiving teams at both the Park City location and then at the Heber location. Heber's open 3 days a week, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. And then we're open Monday through Saturday here at PC. And then that receiving team, believe it or not, when those items are donated, those items are sorted and they're in our stores already the next day. So as soon as that stuff is brought in, my team sorts it and then it goes upstairs and it's priced and on the shelves almost the next day, almost every time.
Yeah, so. And just people that have been doing this a while know what you can get for them? Is that how it's priced?
Correct, yeah. Things are priced based off of, you know, where retail sits, and then we dramatically mark it down and try and give people, you know, a good deal on everything we do. And then we also run trucks to do pickups. So we go kind of Park City, Heber, Camas, and try and stay local, but we go right to people's doors, pick up their furniture, and then we bring that into Heber and Summit and sell it there too.
All right. So you would only pick up furniture, heavy stuff?
Yeah, we try and keep it to large furniture items.
All right. So what items do you not accept?
Yeah, so we used to say mattresses. However, I started getting basic needs assistance and things like that where people need mattresses. We're starting to sell them. If they're in like new kind of condition, people are needing mattresses right now. So mattresses are kind of back on the docket, but it's in like new condition. We take almost everything as long as it's not ripped, torn, stained, that kind of thing, where it's unsellable. That's really the only time we say, you know what, there's other places for it.
Yeah, so. And it's interesting how people will donate, thinking, I mean, that it's valuable to them somehow when mm-hmm. it doesn't work, right? It's like, why would somebody else want to have to deal with something that doesn't work?
Yeah. Right. And we're so blessed to be in the Park City community. The donations we receive are super high end. You know, tons and tons of clothing comes in with the tags still on it. It's definitely a different, with this ski community in this town, a different community to receive donations in.
We also give away so many things that are donated to us, and people don't necessarily, they look at it and say, well, nobody's going to really pay anything for this. That's great. Because our basic needs people, our goal is to try to give it away first and sell it second. So if we can give it to somebody, if we can bless somebody that comes up to the main campus and has a legitimate need, we want to make sure that we're taking care of people at their point of need.
Okay. And let's see. Anything else that we need to talk about with regard to donations there?
I would say with this season and our parking lot, just be patient as you come in and around the circle here in Park City. We have a team that'll meet you right at your car, so you don't even have to get out of your car most of the time. So it's really convenient. It's easy. Our hours, we're there until 3 o'clock every day, except for Saturday, we're there until 2. So yeah, we try and just really take everything we can and get people in and out within a couple minutes.
So is that 9 to 3, 10 to 3? 9 to 3. Okay, good to know. Let's talk briefly about the food pantries situation. Do you still have that need coming through, even though we've seen kind of the SNAP problem resolved?
You're right. We've seen the SNAP problem resolved. So now we have two different issues. One is we have a lot of people that realize that we can help that never knew it before. And so some of them are still coming back because they have legitimate needs for food. Even though they have SNAP benefits, it doesn't cover their entire need for food for their family. So we have more people coming for that reason. And then, as people know, the J1s are here. And they're coming more in droves, and you might look up in the slopes and notice a particular lack of whiteness. And so they're not necessarily getting the hours that they need. And so we have a lot more of them coming to the food pantry, needing food, needing support, needing help. We also have noticed that over the last few months, we have our highest number of basic needs assistance. So people that are just not able to pay bills or not able to get warm clothes or not able to get something to sleep in. More people who are not living in their cars or don't have permanent housing. And so we've had the highest number of people still in our pantries and our basic needs in the history of our existence.
Wow. Tell me, people are able to come to the food pantry twice a month?
Yes, so normally it's twice a month, so we have to follow Utah rules or Utah Food Bank rules, but this month we have permission to do three times. So three times at either one of the pantries. It's the holidays, it's Christmas time, there's people, we just want to make sure people feel really supported and loved during the holidays. So anybody who needs help that falls under that threshold, they're able to come three times this month to get support.
Okay. All right. And if any of our listeners want to help, I mean, how is the best way to help? To drop off food, drop off cash donations?
Yeah, the cash donations are obviously the best because every day at noon we look and see how our fruits and vegetables are doing. And if we don't have enough, that's always our number one priority, is making sure they have fresh food. Fruits, vegetables, they being anybody who's in need, fruits, vegetables, cheese, milks, eggs, and we go out and buy them. And we want to make sure that we have healthy food for everybody to eat in our community.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Just thank you so much for the support of this community. It has been amazing. This has been the most trying time over the last 2 months for us and so many other nonprofits. And this community has done amazing work. And we're just so grateful.
Okay. Steve Richardson, Brock Pulver, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.